Join us this week for a movie that's been on ice for over 30 years as we thaw out that Yeti and step into a lost world of aliens and monsters. Can this Charles Band-produced film from Full Moon measure up with some more modern polishing, or will this fossil deserve to be buried once more in the land of Tubi? Find out and travel back to 1995 and beyond with us this episode. This is Kaiju vs. History, The Primevals.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your anthropology studying teacher's assistant and Yeti enthusiast, Miles, and joining me is a claymation monster homage to King Kong, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing this week?
Hello. Boy, howdy. Didn't think this movie could come to be.
Yeah, I mean,
what a surprise.
This movie has been in production since the 90s. It's been in gestation since the late 60s. Yeah. And, you know, was unfinished for the most part for about 30 years. And when Full Moon resurrected, Charles Band was like, one of the things I want to do is finish the Primevals once and for all. And I mean, I you can't say they didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, they finished the movie for sure. It happened.
Yeah, and this movie came out this year, right? The actual official home release, because I know it made some festival circuits. It did that dance for about a year.
2024, so.
Oh, it did get its home release last year?
I think so, yeah. I think it's been out for a little bit.
I don't know why I thought it got the actual physical release got delayed, but I could be wrong with that.
Blu-ray release.
Yep, May 31st, 2024. But yeah, this movie, which has a pretty fun old school poster. Yeah, it's they've been trying to make this thing for quite some time. So we'll get into that story a little bit. But before we do, Patrick, you got to tell us, what is in a title?
Well, we're going to have to, you know, take a history lesson and start talking about the production of this movie, because it did go through many different, you know, as you said, it was percolated or gestated as many different films and spec scripts. The project came about when stop motion animator David Allen, along with some other technical crew, kind of shot scenes, did a very brief spec script, a scene of a script for a project that was called Raiders of the Stone Ring at the time, which in the late 1960s, you know, that's a pretty classic pulpy title.
Yeah.
They did shoot, like I said, actors. They did some stop motion animation with clay figures, and you can see those. I don't think the video footage has survived, but pictures of the shooting have survived online.
Full Moon, who is a company that I was very enthusiastic as a young lad, was pretty famous for their work in kind of giving audience members behind the scenes peek at their films, even the VHSs. This is even way back in the day, they had this thing called Video Zone that they would attach to the end of their movies that gave you a little bit of a making of featurette. So you could get some interviews, some looks at the sets, or if they had creatures or killer puppets, you got to see the actual puppetry or animatronics. And so it does not surprise me at all that there is surviving behind the scenes stuff, because Full Moon has always been really good with that.
Well, this has been, like I said, in production at the time it was being pitched to Hammer Films, which is also kind of like cheap films, but like definitely B movies of the 60s. They did very famous.
The Dracula run.
Dracula series,
Flesh of Frankenstein. Not Flesh of Frankenstein, that's Warhol. Curse of Frankenstein, I think. Or House of Frankenstein.
Yes.
No, they certainly have some A-tier stuff, but yes.
The projects outside of that sold to or they were trying to sell to Hammer Films went under the title Zeppelin versus Pterodactyls, which is terrible, but is a cool visual because it is, you know, it was going to be a
very different movie.
Yeah, you know, this Zeppelin going into like a Lost Valley situation.
I've seen like the pitch art for that, like, because that was a very famous, like, I think, pitch for years on the internet of like this movie that never got made, Zeppelin versus Pterodactyls, and everyone was always like, oh man, that would have been so cool. Which, yes, it would have, but you know.
So that's the second title it could have gone under, and I've put in our notes here a 1970s cover of Cinema Fantastique, which talked about that in pre-producing a film called The Primevals. But also in the 70s, they kind of rewrote the script, and at various times it was called The Glacial Empire, or later on Primordium, The Arctic World. All fine titles.
Yeah, that's all right.
When Full Moon took up the project or purchased the project in the 1980s or started production in the early 1990s, it went back to The Primevals, but there was a time Charlie Band wanted to put it under the more family-oriented Moonbeam Entertainment, which came about in the 90s, which is their kind of kid-friendly version.
Yeah, I think Pre-Hysteria is one of those.
Yeah.
Which is a very popular one.
They thought about retitling it Hybrids, which is a terrible title because, like, the hybrid monkey aliens in the movie are such a little part of it, such a small part of the film. But yeah, Primevals works. It's great, you know.
Yeah, I like the title. I think the reasoning for it gets very lost in the weeds in the very messy third act. Yeah, let's get into what this movie is about, because you know you start off with this Yeti encounter where this expedition has finally kind of found a Yeti.
Miles, starting this movie, it looks so good, and yeah. I don't know what's wrong with other Full Moon films, but this looked great. I think they gave it some kind of, you know, 2020s treatment to the film stock, because it looks clearer than, you know, almost any movie I've seen recently.
It's a very good looking movie. I mean, the stop motion looks very similar to what they would have been running with in the early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
And especially when I think about some of the stuff that, you know, Charles Band was involved with, even when he had Empire, like, you know, stuff like Robot Jocks, and, you know, obviously his Puppet Master series is kind of what helped keep Full Moon afloat for a bit, as well as some of the other bigger horror series that they had in the early to mid 90s. I always applaud them for, you know, attempting to do that. They also were one of the first to, like, go full CGI and some stuff. Like, Arcade from 1993 goes all in for a, yeah, it's one of my favorites, but also
love,
like,
Arcade.
I do love Arcade. I was bugging them for years to finally release an individual Blu-ray, which they did this year. I'm not even kidding. I have written to Full Moon many, many times, or they'll have some little hype post of like, oh, what would you like for us to see? And every single time, just like, give me Arcade. I don't care if you have to do a print on demand just for me. I will buy it. But they finally did. So I really like how this looks. I think they did obviously clean it up when they were putting it back together. But I think it's just a good looking part of the movie.
Yeah. It's, you know, your opening scene, and it does well to integrate technologies from the entire history of filmmaking, because we do get a scene, like a silk screen of the Yeti and, like, people in the foreground. And, you know, it just feels like a scene that could have been straight out of 1933 King Kong. So I appreciate that. And the movie slows down considerably after that.
Yes, it does.
That introduction, as we get introduced to the characters and the start of their quest, and a good, I want to say 40 minutes before they get to kind of the crux of the film, which is this lost world situation in the mountains of the Himalayas. Stood in for, but they actually did shoot on location in the Dolomites in Italy. So,
that doesn't matter if you're like at the location or just a location, shooting on location just looks so good.
Yeah, yeah, and they had some great vistas. There's a lot of this shot on studio, obviously, and some blue screen, green screen stuff that does not hold up, unfortunately. But so, like I said, so much of it is, I think they, when they took this project back up a few years ago, enhanced digitally. So they did clean it up considerably. And indeed, they, in 2018 is when they started a Indiegogo campaign and raised $40,000 to complete this movie. And I think that's around the time when they kind of took this seriously. David Allen, unfortunately, passed away very kind of long ago now, but he died at the age of 54, fairly young for him, in 1999. And he had been working intermittently since the project was canceled. And they filmed most of the movie in 1994. He'd been working on off and on, including some of the stop motion, basically for free, hoping to finish it and sell the movie elsewhere. But yeah, they, Chris Endicott, his colleague, a mentee of David Allen, was able to complete the movie finally, along with other kind of volunteer stop motion animators, effects people, people that just wanted to get this film out and into the world finally. And this whole story about this film really makes me wonder, you know, how many other movies are out there like 90% of the way done, you know?
And yeah, then just stalled out. So sad. This sounds like a slight, but I don't mean it as one. I think the story of how this film reached completion is actively more interesting than the story that the film is telling.
And that's what this podcast is all about. It's so fun to find out the history of this. And because this seemed like it could have been, I wouldn't say it would have like dominated, but this rode the wave of like post Jurassic Park 90s enthusiasm into this kind of fantasy world. And
if Full Moon had put this out in 1995, I think it would have been a very big hit for them.
At the very least, I feel like you put the right cover on this VHS tape and it's going to do gangbusters in Blockbuster. In
the video store. Yeah.
Gangbusters in Blockbuster.
I 100% agree with that. I think this would have been a big, big rental. They might have wanted to, but they shouldn't put this in theaters. But I think for the direct-to-video circuit, especially in the mid-90s, this would have, if I saw this movie in 95, I would have loved it.
Yeah, some classic kind of, I guess, throwback actors and actresses in this. Juliette Mills is our lead.
So good.
Dr. Collier in the film, and for some reason I thought she was another actress when I watched the trailer for this years ago, but she was probably best known for the soaps that she did, but she did a number of films in the 60s and pretty active, I would say, up until the 70s, and then came back and did this. What else did she do? It hilariously did a voice in the Metalocalypse movie.
Yes.
In 2023. But yeah, a very famous actor.
Yeah, she's great. And it's one of those people, like, when you see her, like, oh, her.
Yes, her. And Leon Russom plays the tracker, like the animal tracker, who he was in so many smaller parts in TV shows and movies.
Yeah, he's done some. I guess his biggest thing was probably he had a 30 episodes of Prison Break, and then in the late 70s he was in Another World.
He was in a whole bunch of episodes of Star Trek.
Yep.
He was in short appearances, and
he's in the pilot of the X-Files.
Oh yeah, is he one of like the smoking men or another?
No, he's one of the, I think he's a detective. He's a detective in that episode. And yeah, I think the cast themselves are pretty competent. I even like how this movie begins, where it's like, you know, you're following this one, you know, student who we find out like delivered his doctorate on his theory about the Yeti, but it was rejected because it did not have enough. All the evidence was so circumstantial. It didn't have any hard evidence. So when he...
And then they find a Yeti and he's like, I told you.
Yeah. So they find the Yeti. And like, of course, like he's the only one of this massive press conference asking legitimate questions. The doctor, or the Dr. Claire, whatever, she knows exactly who he is, and is apparently a fan of his, despite the fact that she was one of the people who rejected his doctorate because for the reason of no concrete evidence.
Yes.
And but she's like, I want you on this team. Come meet like our other like researcher, and then I want you to go on the expedition with us. I'm taking a leave of absence, and I want to write a book with you. Like, it was actually kind of refreshing that it wasn't some sort of contentious relationship, which I thought was pretty neat.
No, it felt very similar to probably the initial script they had written in the 1960s, which is like a cooperative, like, oh, we got a whole stick together team is put together to explore this world. There's a few other characters. Siku is the brother of one of the Himalayan kind of Sherpas who's killed by a Yeti early in that first scene. And Kathleen is also, where is she from? I forget. Totally forget what her, she's in the Sherpa's hut, but she's not.
Yeah. She's Kathleen. Like, no, but she is like, I think the like kind of a local researcher, like she's been there for years.
Right. So it's a great team, and it's such a simple plot, because like once they get there, they start exploring, they get captured almost immediately after they find out that is indeed a alien civilization that came here and died out, and their like subservient race of more primeval lizards has taken over and now has like a pretty cool Colosseum, like ancient Rome style civilization here. And they are capturing and operating on these Yetis, turning them more kind of antagonistic, which I would like to talk about just briefly. I really enjoy the Yeti stop motion figures in this film.
I did as well.
A lot of character in the facial expressions. I would say it is definitely an homage to 1933's King Kong. Very similar armature. They even walk like an ape in parts of the movie, which I thought was cool. And great cover art as these four-fingered, kind of big-nosed creatures. I was just looking at FullMoonHorror.com's. They have a like a special edition Blu-ray edition that it says it's $60, and you get like a case and, you know, little mini postcards and pens and things, but it's marked down from $120. I'm like, man, that is way too much for what you're getting here. But $60, I feel like, is right. If you enjoy this movie, yeah, go ahead and watch it. It's got some special features, a special DVD making of, and kind of a documentary about David Allen, the creator of this film. And, you know, he also worked on a lot of other Full Moon things. I think he did Puppet Master, and he actually worked on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. So a lot of tie-in history with him if you want that Blu-ray set. What's your general thoughts on the movie? Did you have scenes that really you enjoyed, or
I mean, I love the first encounter with the Yeti. I think that's exceptionally well done, and it kind of, I mean, gives you some throwback. It almost feels like, oh, what if we kept working around with kind of the Harryhausen stop motion stuff? Because it looks like a good, like, it still looks kind of a modern version of that. It's still rough around the edges because it's still a Full Moon production. They didn't have a ton of money, but I think it looks really, really great. I love that initial bit where they kind of fall down into the lost world, sort of speak. Mm-hmm. Always a big fan of that, even though like they just leave all their stuff, which I think is super irresponsible. They're like, oh, it's warm here. And I'm like, yes. And when you go back, you're going to be very, very cold. And let me put that stuff in your backpack, you know, not stripped down because, oh, it's a nice tropical climate. I liked that stuff a lot. What about you? Did you have something that kind of stuck out to you?
Yeah, I did enjoy once we get to the aliens. I thought that stop motion looked really good. It was very fluid.
It looks good. It reminds me of like some of the stop motion when they actively use it in Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Like it's got that kind of jiltedness. I mean,
they're same time. Yeah,
it works, but like it just works.
And I think, like I said, we're finishing this film over like the last 5 years. So they have a lot of kind of anti-aliasing technology they can just kind of throw on the top of things to smooth out some of those scenes. And, you know, they've come a long way with stop motion in general, just the last 20 years since this movie has been completely on hiatus. So it's interesting to see maybe how they retroactively added some of that in with finishing this movie. Because I really think it was just the special effects that needed finishing here.
Yeah.
Because they I mean, it didn't feel like there were any scenes missing.
Well, they couldn't do any reshoots. I mean,
yeah, that's the thing. You had those actors in on location and then back filming in like 1994, and none of them will look the same, obviously, but right. Some of them are dead. So, but yeah, there are a lot of Lost World kind of kaiju movies that feel similar. I feel like this one doesn't really do anything special, but it is special in its history, which is always interesting too for this kaiju versus history podcast. I did like the Colosseum segment. Once again, a scene that we've seen in other movies like countless times, but is cool here. And when the other Yeti comes out, you're like, oh no, we know that these creatures are like messing with it. And it gets a lot of sympathy, I think, just from its circumstances. And once again, very similar to King Kong. You kind of root for the monkey.
Yeah, it's one of the situations, just like movies we've done before, like Space Monster Wagmagwi, where it had this kind of lost status that, like, and there's something, I think, no matter what, when you find out about, like, a movie, no matter what its, you know, station is, oh, this movie that's been lost for X amount of time, either finally got completed or finally got everything it needed to get a release, it's always super interesting. And it doesn't matter if it's a Space Monster, Wagmagwi, the Primeval's, or Grizzly 2. Like, it's still always kind of like, oh, I want to see this, because you never know. You could find the next hidden gem. So far, not really, but, like, there's always that chance. And I do like that, because we have found films that have been thought to have been lost or that were never fully completed, but they just got that little extra push. And I love that. And like you, I'm left wondering, well, how many more movies have this circumstance that we don't know about? How many great movies have, you know, audiences around the world been robbed of? Like, because, yeah, I know we're talking about a lot of, you know, some of the stuff is, you know, Grizzly 2, it's super schlocky, but at some point you're going to unearth some gem that's like, holy crap, we had a holy grail on our hands, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think I would like to get into kind of rating this movie.
Because
interestingly enough, there's just not that many ratings for it out there online. I think it's kind of gotten middling reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and I'm there with it as far as personal enjoyment. I personally enjoyed this movie on paper a lot more than I did actually watching it as a film. Like I said, I've been looking forward to this just because the history of it is so fascinating. But I think I'd rather watch a documentary about it, like go get that Blu-ray for the extra features than the film itself. If this had come out in the 1990s, for us, for this podcast, it would have had very stiff competition in the Heisei era of Godzilla and Gamera. But as far as like American movies, you know, this is up there with Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, you know, which is a fun movie.
Sure, but it's still no Tremors.
But I mean, it blows like Zarkor and
when you're talking about some of the worst movies we've done in the entire show, for sure.
But yeah, like I said, if we're rating it against the 90s, it probably went up a little bit higher. But
yeah,
in 2023, it's hard. This is definitely better than an Asylum film, but my curiosity didn't give additional points to a fairly simple film. So I'm giving it, for my personal enjoyment, a 6 out of 10. What about you, Miles?
Oh, Patrick. Sweet, sweet Patrick. So here's the thing about this movie. I find the first 2/3 of this movie extremely charming. Like, I was on board. Once they kind of bring the whole aliens and the reptilian stuff and really just muddy their entire story, I like just kind of noped out. Like, I was just like, okay, yeah, I'm not that interested. Not that I'm not interested in the idea, but like the movie that you sold me and the movie that this was just completely changed into a different Saturday afternoon, you know, sci-fi channel movie. Yeah. And it didn't work for me. There's a way to make that work, but I liked the way the reptilians looked. The puppetry and animatronics were really cool. But I thought that part of the story was frankly really dumb, and it just didn't work. I, I, I'm still super enthusiastic about the first two thirds of the movie. I think it's decently acted. I think the special effects, even though they're given a little bit of a, you know, 21st century push, look fantastic. And I think as a kind of archaeological find, if you will, it's a really interesting movie. But because of that third act really just kind of tanking it for me, and some of the odd choices they decided to make with it, including like they introduce another Yeti who just immediately dies.
Yeah.
In a pretty like sad way. I'm with you. I'm my personal enjoyment is a 6 out of 10. Like I certainly enjoyed the movie. I'm glad I saw it. I think it's a great curiosity, a great conversation piece, but I'm not gonna pretend it's anything more than what it is, which is a fair to decent full moon venture that probably would have made a ton of money 30 years ago.
See, I'm giving it high marks for technical aspect because I think this is probably the best looking full moon feature ever made. As far as its visuals, it's pretty great. And there's still stuff that's like bad that you like like I said, the blue screen for some scenes didn't work out great, but it's a very simple story. Like I said, it is kind of muddied at the end. And I kind of wish they had formed like a friendship with one of the Yetis. It feels like that was an element that should have been in this movie if they were going to make it kind of a King Kong like story. But yeah, it is just very simple characters set up to explore this world and show off the stop motion animation from, you know, now 100 years prior, 90 years prior. So you have stuff in there that's, you know, from Willis O'Brien to Harryhausen that seems to represent the entire gamut of this art form. And it's kind of a pinnacle in a lot of ways. Some of the scenes, like the first one in the Himalayas with the Yeti, I think were shot and finished in the 2020s, you know? So it's something that because they kept the models or the armatures at the very least, and they kept all these notes for the filming of this, people were able to finish it and recreate it. And I think that's part of why it looks so good. But like I said, just watching this movie on actual film stock is so crazy because the last 30 odd films or so that we've done for the podcast have been all digital films, and sometimes that works great. If you are a big budget Hollywood movie, that looks amazing. Oftentimes it does not look great for some of these lower budget films, but yeah, I thought it looked so good. It was really a saving grace of this film and made me want to actively look at the screen, even if the story wasn't amazing. So I'm giving it an 8 out of 10 for its technical aspects. Pretty high.
That is pretty high.
What about you, Miles?
I'm a little less enthusiastic just because I think the third act just really falls apart. But I do agree that I think the actors are good. I think the special effects look incredible. Like, this is like as good as you can get one of these type of movies to look from the time period. And I think that in of itself is a great example. Even if you were like teaching a class on these types of movies, like the stuff in this film is really, really solid. And I would venture to say that like it's what really lifts this movie. Because I think the script completely falls apart and it kind of falls under the weight of its own ideas. Like this, some of the stuff sounds like it would have been made for like a really solid novel to like fully explore some of these ideas, especially when they get into the like what was going on with the aliens and what they were really doing. Because like they explain some of it, but I'm just like, you blink and you're missing. Like, wait, huh? And It's just too muddied and convoluted the way it's presented here. So I'm dropping it a little bit from you. I'm going to give it a 7 because I do think its technical is where this movie shines. It's the reason to see it for sure. The on location direction, I think the direction in general is pretty solid. Yeah. And I mean, it's really just kind of sunk by a overall weak script, even though like it's only weak in this you know third act. To me, there's some silly stuff, but it's the kind of things that you expect in a movie like this. It's got some of this pulpy writing, which I really do appreciate. Like when you meet what's his name, like Butch Montana or whatever.
Yeah, the Leon Russom's character.
Yeah, it's
Rondo Montana,
which is like, I mean, it just sounds like a name that like Ron Swanson invented for a character. Like, it sounds like that's somebody that Nick Offerman should be playing. Rondo Montana, paddle your own canoe. But I did enjoy this movie quite a bit, and the technical aspects are where this does soar more than anything else.
Yeah. What about where do you rate this on its importance? Does this count as a kaiju movie for you, Miles?
No.
Okay. Well, what about its importance as a kaiju film? Where would you rate it there?
So here's the thing: it's certainly a kaiju adjacent film, and we always have this conversation when it comes to a Kong like creature or a yeti. But I also think because of its circumstances, it's a movie worth talking about and a movie worth discovering. And like we both have said, we think the journey of this movie is probably more interesting than the movie itself. But because of that, it kind of rises above more than just being a curiosity. So I would give this about a 6 out of 10 on that scale.
I'm a little lower. I think for most kaiju adjacent films, I can't get much higher than a 5 out of 10. And this, despite all the, you know, stop motion animation history here that plays up other kaiju films that we've done on this list.
Yeah, which is kind of why I waited it higher in this respect.
It's just the Yeti I wanted more of and is in the movie very little.
Fully agreed.
The Yeti is a great creation. We just didn't get nearly enough of it. And so sad because it is the most expressive actor in the movie, you know.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's
doing like the most work here, and like I said, you get a lot of sympathy for it. But yeah, it's kind of more similar to the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. You get glimpses of them, but this movie is more about the adventure than any one of the monster creations in it. But yeah, I feel like the grace of the technologies being used in this film are so kaiju centric. I'm very happy that we were able to cover this, probably the last stop motion animation film that we're going to get to do. But I'm giving it a 5 out of 10, which means we're both sitting at a 6 out of 10 for The Primeval's. High 6 out of 10, but 6 out of 10 nevertheless. And that's our podcast final for The Primeval's. Wasn't expecting a super high score, but I will say this movie is probably worth at least one watch, mostly because it is free on Tubi and a few other places. And probably if you can find some YouTubers, or maybe they put the DVD extras out online someplace, it's probably worth checking out the history of this film because it is fascinating. I don't think I can recall a film with a longer production history of like 60 something years, but
right.
Very, very interesting. You know, at one point the Yeti in the production was white, you know, was closer to a standard Yeti, but it is interesting that it is a brown furred Yeti, because that makes sense in the lush kind of forest setting that they actually find it in.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Forgot to mention that earlier. Right, so that's going to do it for this week's episode. Reach out to us online. You can find us all over by Google searching Kaiju versus History, our website, our Letterboxd, social media accounts, or you can just email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail. Log in to the Cosmic Crit Discord channel where we have a Kaiju versus History section. Was it called like a thread for this podcast?
A channel.
That's it, my host. Posting news for upcoming kaiju projects. I think one of the most recent things is Monarch Legacy of Monsters is getting a prequel series, not just a sequel to the, or season two to the series, but we're getting a whole prequel with Wyatt Russell in the 1960s, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. How exciting is that, Miles? I'm stoked.
I am too. Very excited.
I like expanding that universe kind of laterally as opposed to only going forward, because I mean, my score will attest, I loved Kong Skull Island. I loved kind of doing period piece films. So having a whole series set in the creation of Monarch is going to be pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
What, buddy, are we doing next week?
Oh, boy. Well, Well, thank you, Patrick, and thank you, listeners. We're going to catch you next week when we return to the bottom of the ocean to see what other horrors it can show us in an unlikely sequel that gives us more of the action of the original movie and more mayhem and little dogs in peril. Wetsuit up with us and Jason Statham next week, because time to tune in for History versus Meg 2, The Trench.